It wouldn't be a show if Lonzo wasn't on his ear about something, baby. Calm down, big fella. We're going to be all right. Welcome to a Tuesday, November the 13th, 2018 edition of The Huddle. I am Josh Phillips sitting in for Greg G. Mac McKinney, who is, do we need to check on him? Did he drown yesterday? Is he underwater? I mean, where's the big man at? No, he's.
I believe he has a boat.
Yeah, is so that
I'm
what
sure,
he's got?
I'm sure he'll be all right.
Yeah, I think he may have an 8-foot bateau somewhere around that's keeping him afloat. But anyway, there's never a dull moment here in the palatial and magnanimous station that is ESPN Upstate, Intercom, ESPN Upstate. I am Josh Phillips. Welcome in, Lonzo, to a Tuesday edition. And all of you out there, I hope you're all doing well, enjoying your work day, your work week, as we are at Tuesday, one more day before hump day. We've got a ton to get to. College football to talk about, NFL, Monday night game. You know, Eli Manning must have been listening to the show and how Lonzo was just trashing him left and right with his Hall of Fame bid. And what does Eli do? He leads two drives in the fourth quarter, one with 2 minutes left in the game, to upset the San Francisco 49ers 27-23 with a pass. Eli was 19 of 31 for 188 yards and three touchdowns. And the major stat, now he wasn't great. He was just great when he had to be. I mean, the fact that the New York football Giants were down 20-10 does not change my mind in the fact that they need to draft a quarterback. We discussed it a little bit yesterday on the show about possible replacements. Now, the funny thing is this morning, I've never seen a fan base more upset about a loss. New York football Giants fans are actually ticked off that the Giants won because they are in the number one draft sweepstakes.
You know, they should be. And as far as Eli, he didn't do anything special. I mean, he's going against San Francisco's defense. San Francisco's pretty bad, too. I mean, you've got to be bad if you make Eli look pretty good. I got to say, though,
I want to rip your head off for that statement, but I can't because what you're saying.
It was a pretty good game, though.
Well, what you're saying is true, okay? It was two bad teams, and somebody had to win. So as much as I want to, I can't disagree with you, bro. I can't fault you in your thought process because it literally looked like two dudes dressed up in, you know, those inflatable sumo outfits that bounce around.
I've always wanted to try one of those.
And they bang into each other, and it's like calling it a fight. Well, that's what we saw between the 49ers and the Giants last night, and somebody had to fall down, and it ended up being the 49ers.
But you know what it is? Two really bad teams playing each other turned out to be a pretty good game. I mean, it really did. All things considered, it could have been 3-0 at the end, but it wasn't. There were some touchdowns. There were some good defensive plays. It was not a bad game, but it was a decent game between two really bad teams.
It was highly entertaining, especially the last quarter and a half when the Giants – boy, the Giants are bad. I mean, the 49ers have an excuse in the fact that they don't have a quarterback. – They're rebuilding and retooling that roster. Shanahan has got to be pulling his hair out. But, man, the Giants are bad. Now, they've got some nice pieces. Saquon Barkley was just a man among boys again. And the one bright spot is it was nice to see Shurmur actually get creative with his play calling. I think Saquon had 12 rushes for 60-something yards. He had eight receptions for 45 yards. He was a threat running the ball, catching the ball. They got him out of the backfield. They got him more involved. I am a huge, huge fan of backs in the passing game. It puts so much pressure on defenses, and that's when Shurmur finally opened up this offense. I mean, Odell Beckham was Odell Beckham. He was the best player on the field outside of his own teammate, and he showed that. Over 115 yards receiving, touchdowns. You know, but could you not at least feel like you were pulling for Eli in that last drive?
No.
I'm almost almost, not quite. If Patrick Brown was still in here, he would be astonished. But I mean, the guy has thrown, he threw his 360th touchdown pass, which ranks him seventh all time, tied with Ben Roethlisberger. And my Kentucky faux waterfall hair man over there doesn't think that.
Do not start that again. Do not start that.
Doesn't think that Eli deserves in the Hall of Fame. You want to join the discussion? Hit us up on the Healthcare Text Line. Text ESPN to 71307. Hit us up on Twitter at ESPN Upstate. Or tell Alexa, hey, Alexa, play ESPN Upstate. Or call in, hit the call in line 844-477-3776. If you want to discuss the game last night, if you want to discuss Le'Veon Bell, he's got a little less than 2.5 hours, or a little more than 2.5 hours, to decide whether he wants to push away from $15 million bucks. I mean, think about that. Think about being in the position in your job where you could push away from the table with $15 million, 14 and a half, because some screwball is going to hit me up on the text line. No, coach, it's 14 and a half. You're wrong. All right, so 14 and a half million dollars. Now, there's news that the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to franchise tag him. I don't see that happening. Why would you do that? Why would you commit $18 million to this guy, and he's not going to play? He is not going to play. And quite frankly, the Pittsburgh Steelers don't need him. James Conner is playing at an all-pro level. And I'm still trying to debate as of 1:15 this afternoon on who has the leverage, because to me, I don't think anybody's got leverage in this. Pittsburgh is winning over the fact that James Conner has been lights out for this whole year. So there's no need for them to sign Le'Veon. Le'Veon is looking at the fact and actually believes that if he sits out this year, goes to free agency, he can sign an $80 million contract with 50 guaranteed. I think he's out of his mind.
You got to franchise him. Listen, for the sake of the league, they have to do it and take the hit, because if not, more guys are going to try this crap.
But nobody's going to pick up that contract. That's the problem. And if I'm Pittsburgh, I don't want this guy in my locker room anymore.
Well, you don't have to worry about it. I mean, you take the, as you said, an $18 million hit, but he ain't going to come to.
I'm not just going to hand him $18 million to sit at home. I mean, you got to give, Lonzo, you're going to give this guy $18 million to stay at home and do nothing under a salary cap? And you're in the run, you're in the process of making a run for a Super Bowl, and you've got to deal with that money, that cash?
Listen, you're right. I'm just in a bad mood, and I want to be spiteful.
Yeah, I know you are, I love it.
I want to be spiteful
to someone.
Because when
you're in a bad mood, we have a better radio show. I'm going to try to put you in a worse mood as we keep going along, because I love it when you fight with me. That being said, if you're a Steelers fan, do you want this guy back? I mean, he is a top 10 player in the league, but you don't need him. You just hung 50 on the Carolina Panthers. You're 6-3. You're square in the AFC race. Outside of the Chiefs, nobody has separated themselves from the rest of the AFC. So you are squarely in the mix to go to the AFC Championship. Your offense seems to be gathering more and more momentum. You're winning your division. Do you even want this guy on your team?
Well, a lot of players don't want him back. So, I mean, when you get players speaking out against you coming back, then you should not bring him back.
Well, and that's the decision.
But he ain't coming back anyway, well, so it doesn't matter.
That's the decision that the Rooneys and Mike Tomlin have got to decide, is how are we going to what can we do? And I'm of the opinion of this. I don't care how good a player is. If he doesn't want to be there, then get rid of him. If you've got to talk a guy into being a part of your franchise or team, period, I don't care if it's college or high school, if you've got to talk him into being a part of your organization, then he doesn't need to be there. Especially when you got a guy like James Conner. I mean, you want to talk about beloved in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is as blue-collar a town as there is. And here you got a guy that beat cancer. He is your starting running back. He filled in for an all-pro, and all you were hoping was to just get serviceable numbers out of him. That's all you were hoping to get is just, James, just fill the position till we get this contract served up. And all James Conner has done is put in an all-pro season. I've got him on my – I took him in fantasy. He's destroying people at the running back position for me. That offensive line is creating holes where backs – I don't know what – you know what Le'Veon Bell deserves? Here's what he deserves. He deserves to go to Cleveland.
Listen, no, I would say like Buffalo. Don't say –
you know what? That's even better.
Don't say
he
Cleveland.
He deserves to go to Buffalo.
Because Cleveland's actually winning a game here and there.
Well,
so.
Buffalo just blew out the Jets. He deserves to go to the Jets.
There we go.
Okay? He deserves to go –
Or Arizona.
Okay? Some team with no offensive line that he's going to get beat up left and right, but he's going to make $50 million a year. I mean, he's got a chance to win a Super Bowl.
But this is a guy, obviously, I understand that you are your business when you're in the NFL, but he cares more about himself than he does team, so he needs to go to a bad team where he can just care about himself.
Look, I have no problem with that in the NFL level. And I've said this forever. If it's time to get your cheddar, you get the whole round of cheese, baby. I have no problem with him trying to make himself better from a monetary standpoint. But I mean, he's not in bad shape at $15 million this year. Now, I'll also say the Pittsburgh Steelers need to pony up the dough. I mean, you don't let a guy like this walk. But maybe they are letting him walk because look what he's doing. And maybe we're seeing out in public what they've known behind the scenes. Let's go to the phone lines, get Delvin in. Delvin, welcome to the huddle.
Hey, guys. How y'all doing?
Awesome.
There's another reason nobody's talking about it, that they don't want to pay him. He's one drug test away from being out for a whole year.
Say that again, Delvin. You went out on me.
I said the reason. There's another reason why they're not paying him. That's one. He's one drug test away from being out for a whole year.
That's true. And I don't blame him for his injuries. I mean, that's part of football. Yeah. You know, but you try to get back and you play a running back position. And Delvin, thank you for the phone call. And look, you can blame – here's one thing that you can blame if you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan on, and I'd love to hear – if we've got any Steelers fans, by all means, call in. I would love to get your opinion from a fan's perspective on where you stand with Le'Veon Bell. Because right now, he looks over the fact that Aaron Donald, the best defensive lineman in football, just got $90 million. He looks over at the fact that Todd Gurley just renegotiated his contract for like $60, $70 million. And there's Le'Veon Bell saying, I'm a perennial all-pro, and you don't want to pay me what Todd Gurley's getting? Because there is a competitive balance in the NFL and among competitors that he thinks he's the best running back in the league. And it's hard to argue against that. Now, I'm sure Gurley and Zeke Elliott would disagree, but, you know, you're not going to go wrong with Todd Gurley, Zeke Elliott, and Le'Veon Bell as the best running backs. Jamal Hunt used to be in that category. I don't know if he's still there or not. He
Kareem
shows
Hunt.
Flashes.
Yeah,
Kareem
yeah.
Hunt, excuse
yeah.
me.
I think part of his problem is the rest of that offense is so good, sometimes they forget they've got a great running back there.
Exactly. You want to join the conversation, 844-477-3776. Hit us up on the text line, text ESPN on the healthcare text line, 71307. I'm of the opinion I would give this sucker his walking papers and say, don't let the door hit you where the good Lord split you. This is The Huddle at ESPN Upstate. I love the fact that Lonzo is giving his Stan Lee tribute today with his Captain America shirt. What a life that man lived. 95 years old.
And you know, the thing about Stan Lee, we all want to leave a legacy when we die. What a legacy this guy's lived.
Forever.
He will, as long as the earth exists.
Forever.
He will, you know, something that he created will be around.
Forever. Who is your favorite character?
See, it's hard to say. He created so many. I mean, Fantastic Four, Spider-Man, Black Panther, I mean, just so many. But I got to go with Spider-Man. I know everyone says that. But when I was a little kid, every time I got sick, which was way too often in Ohio because it's stinking cold, and it made me sick all the time. Every time I got sick, they brought me Spider-Man comic books. So you would think I would go, I don't want that. That makes me remember when I was sick. But it also, you know, you got extra attention when you're sick and that kind of stuff. But I could always relate to him, to Peter Parker.
Mine's a toss-up between Batman and the Hulk. I like the alter ego of the Bruce Banner Hulk situation, but he's broke. And that's where I like Batman, because the guy's a billionaire.
See, same thing with Iron Man. I mean, he's a billionaire.
He's a billionaire.
Yeah, there you go. That they say money can't buy you happiness, but it's got
to
ease.
Only poor people make that statement. Let's go to the phone lines and bring in Tyler. Tyler, welcome to the huddle.
How's it going, guys?
Awesome. How are you, sir?
Good, good. I'm a diehard Steelers fan. And
all right.
I'm going to tell you the truth. I hope Le'Veon Bell never comes back. He is so full of crap, and I'm 100% glad that James Conner has taken over, because what he's done in the last all year is impressive. We never asked this guy to be this much for us, and that's all I wanted to say. I don't want to see Le'Veon Bell ever again.
Thank you, Tyler. Appreciate that. Yeah, wow. You know, Tyler, an unabashed Pittsburgh fan. Are there any Pittsburgh fans that want him back? Because if Zeke Elliott pulled a stunt like this, I would escort him out of Dallas stage left.
Now, I think the question is, if Connor wasn't doing so well, would people want Le'Veon Bell back?
Yes. But see, that's where it makes it tolerable. That's where it gives fans and the Steeler Nation and the Steeler organization leverage to say, hit the door. I love the fact that Pittsburgh picked up James Conner when they did. There was a lot of criticisms of, will he be the player that he was after the chemo treatments and all of that? He's actually better. And this guy is big. He's 230 pounds. And he's a threat out of the back. That's the other thing is, that they're not missing. See, Le'Veon Bell is what I call a three-way back. He can block, he can run, and he can catch out of the backfield. James Conner is the same thing in a bigger body. And he's a nightmare matchup at the second and third level of defenses. So going to be very, very interesting. I don't think he's going to report. Matter of fact, I'm going to say he's not. Le'Veon Bell's not going to show up at 4 o'clock or at 3:59 at the last hour and say, hey, here I am, let's sign this deal. It's not going to happen. He firmly believes somebody's going to give him $15 million in guaranteed money. Now, he might be right. And look, I think this is the one situation where it is a win-win for both the Steelers and Le'Veon Bell. I mean, you want to talk, and I almost said Dez Bryant because I had him on the brain, that nut. I mean, is that not poetic justice? As a Cowboys fan, I mean, you don't want somebody to get hurt.
Come on.
But the fact that he went to New Orleans and started running his mouth about all this other stuff and what he was going to do to Dallas, and then he tweaks his leg. I mean, again, I don't wish injury on nobody, but that's a little poetic justice, which the Saints – signed Brandon Marshall today. I saw that, do a one-year deal. They're trying to go all in that this team's going to win the Super Bowl, and who can argue with them right now? The power rankings in the NFL just came out, and the New Orleans Saints are number one. I'm astonished by that. I thought Kansas City would be, but they're not. Kansas City's number two in the new power rankings. Other things to get to today, we can talk about that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have sent an enormous message to Jameis Winston that you are out the door. They announced today that Fitzpatrick is the starting quarterback and will be the rest of the year. Goodbye, Jameis.
Will somebody pick him up, though? I mean, if you look at some teams that are hurting for a quarterback, a new start may be what he needs.
I'm going to say yes, because the NFL is a vomit league. I mean, when you've got clowns like Chan Gailey that keep finding jobs and head coaching jobs and, you know, all these different bad coaches that keep resurfacing in other places, it's a closed-loop league that they like quarterbacks that have had longevity, meaning more than a year. He's had that. So, yes, somebody will pick him up, not with the contract that he's got. He's going to have to take a pay cut, and he's going to have to decide if he wants to be a backup or not. My money's on the Jets, because they always go after quarterbacks like this.
You see the potential that was there, and if he could have stayed out of trouble and everything. And why did they put him back in when he came back if they were going to do this? I mean, that was – you should have stuck with Fitzpatrick the rest of the way.
See, that's where I disagree with you, bro, because I did not like him out of Florida State. I thought he was a wasted pick. I thought he was an above-average quarterback that played on a stacked team.
I do remember him, you know, they were comparing him to Mariota, who's going to be the better quarterback.
Right.
Who's going to have the greatest upside. And a lot of people said it was Jameis. They didn't say Mariota. And look at what Tennessee's doing right now. They're not looking too bad.
No, they're not. And look, now I love Jameis as a college quarterback. Got in a lot of trouble a little bit south of here toward the Georgia line with the Clemson fan base when he came out, but by the translation to the NFL, I just didn't see it. I didn't like the fact his mobility in the pocket. Now look, hear what I'm saying about this. You don't have to be the most agile guy, but you've got to be mobile within the pocket. One of the attributes that people don't talk enough about Tom Brady is, even though he's not a great athlete, he is exceptional manipulating the pocket. He knows where to slide, when to slide, how to get his front foot planted, how to get his back foot where it needs to be so that he can deliver the football. He understands pressure of defenses, and that's all pocket awareness. And Jameis doesn't have that. But he doesn't have the athleticism like a Marcus Mariota that when the pocket breaks down, that he can run and get you 8, 9, 10 yards. See, that's where Deshaun Watson has set the world on fire, because he did that in college to Alabama, and then now he's doing it in the NFL. Not that Deshaun is a great athlete, but he's good enough. He's just athletic enough that when the pocket breaks down, he can get you 8. So in second and 15 with a sack that the Bucs have to deal with, the Texans have second and 1. That is an enormous advantage in the NFL. Enormous. But definitely Tampa Bay sending notice that Jameis Winston's tenure in a Tampa Bay uniform is over.
So if you're one of these really bad teams and you know you're going to have one of the top 2 or 3 picks, do you take a chance on Jameis Winston and go after, if you don't think the quarterback crop is that good this year, do you take a chance on him and go after another need that you have?
Possibly, but you bring up a great point from a perception standpoint. Now, I disagree with the thought process from a media standpoint that this NFL quarterback draft class is not very good. I think you're going to find a good quarterback in this draft, but from a perception standpoint, it's bad. It's almost like the rest of the NFL is saying, well, there's Justin Herbert, the kid out of Oregon, and then there's nobody else. So because of that, and it's a fearful league, because of that perception, you may be on something there, Lonzo, that the rest of the league says, hey, you know what, we're not going to find, there's only one Herbert in the draft, and then it's a massive drop-off from there, so we may as well get a guy that at least has the experience in the league. And there's something to that.
Even if he's going to be, I mean, chances are Jameis is a step up from what you have now if you're drafting early and then you can get further on a year or two down the road and get your quarterback. But at least you can get, you know, a really good, who knows, lineman, something that you need. Because if you're that bad, you need a lot of things. And at least he might get you a couple wins.
There is some breaking news for college football fans. There is an investigation into the officiating of the Alabama-Mississippi State game officially. And I don't blame them. There were several I watched that game because I was fascinated to see how Alabama was going to do against Mississippi's defensive line. And there were several calls in that game that Mississippi State flat got rooked. The biggest one being Alabama was up 14-7. They ruled a catch, an incompletion in the end zone that would have made it 14-7, changed the momentum of the game on Mississippi State, and instead they got a penalty and got backed up on the very next play and came away with no points. The other one was when Damian Harris fumbled the football and they didn't even review it, and Mississippi State came up with the ball. So right now, that officiating crew and the SEC, both the Alabama Athletic Department as well as Mississippi State, and this is according to the report, both athletic departments of Mississippi State and Alabama have been informed that there is a formal investigation into the officiating of the Alabama-Mississippi State game. What does all that mean? It means bupkis. They're not going to change the score. They're not going to suddenly say, oh, well, the officials screwed the game up and Mississippi State really should have won, so now we're going to take the loss away or the win away from Alabama and give it to Mississippi State. But what it is going to do, it's going to put the rest of the SEC on notice, especially Alabama. They are going to be scrutinized from here on out. Every call in an Alabama game is going to be under the microscope.
Could a referee lose their job over this?
Absolutely.
So there definitely could be repercussions as far as that goes.
Absolutely.
And what are they investigating? Whether that the referees were paid off, or I mean,
they're according to the report, they're investigating the improprieties from the crew, because apparently Joe Moorhead demanded a review of the Damian Harris fumble and was told no, and that is a massive boo-boo. Massive, a turnover. A head coach has every right to demand on a turnover a review of that play. And that's the thing. They refused to review it. It would have been one thing if the officials stopped the game and then came over and said, okay, we're going to review it. We disagree with it. It's Alabama's ball. But they refused to review the play. And that is in huge no-no, because that's in stark contrast of the rules. Going to be interested to see how that turns out. The National League and the American League have named their rookies of the year. We will discuss that shortly. This is The Huddle at ESPN Upstate. I love that rejoin, and it fits with the mood that's in here today, baby, because we are flat getting after it. I am Josh Phillips sitting in for Greg McKinney along with Lonzo. Is this rain ever going to go away?
Maybe not.
You know what? We shouldn't complain. And I wanted to keep it a little light, but I am going to get a little serious. We need to be praying for our fellow countrymen in California that are dealing with the fires that are going. People are losing their homes. They're losing their lives. They're losing a lot with those wildfires out there. And if you have the means to donate or help those people out, by all means, do so, because they need it. I saw Gerard Butler, the Hollywood actor, tweeted out yesterday a picture of his home and his vehicle, which looked like an old Jeep Grand Cherokee, and it's gone. All you see is a burnt down shell of a house, and the car looks like a bomb dropped on it. So obviously he will have the means to rebuild his life, but there's a lot of people out there that do not have those means to rebuild their home. So let's be thinking and praying for those people, and if we can, send our money to them in whatever charity you deem appropriate. Back to the discussion. We're talking about Le'Veon Bell, and he's got till 4 o'clock this afternoon to sign back with the Pittsburgh Steelers, or he will be out of a job. And the Steelers also have till 4 o'clock if they're going to franchise tag him. The Bucs have named Fitzpatrick their starting quarterback, essentially sending Jameis Winston out the door. The National League has named their Rookie of the Year, and there's not really a surprise that Ronald Acuna Jr. Is, all you Braves fans out there, now have something to cheer for, had an outstanding year that a lot of people did not anticipate the Braves having, and the catalyst of that was Ronald Acuna Jr. He got 27 out of 30 votes, which is pretty significant. He beat out Juan Soto of the Nationals. Acuna Jr. hit .293 with 26 home runs, had 16 stolen bases. Both of those stats led all National League rookies. So Acuna Jr. is your Rookie of the Year. I'm probably going to butcher this name, but that's okay. The American League Rookie of the Year, Shohei Ohtani.
I think it's Shohei Ohtani.
Shohei. So I wasn't far. I wasn't far off. Shohei Ohtani was named the American League Rookie of the Year, and rightfully so. And I just love this. He beat out two Yankees. The poor Yankees. They can't win at anything. They got kicked out of the American League East. They got kicked out of the playoffs. Now two of their players got booted out of the Rookie of the Year, but Ohtani, a two-way player, which you don't see any more of those. Check out these numbers. He batted .285 with 22 home runs, had a .564 slugging percentage, which would have ranked fourth in the American League if he had had enough at-bats, which he didn't. Because check this out. He was a pitcher that sported a 4-2 record in 51 innings with 10 starts, had a 3.31 ERA with 63 strikeouts. That is impressive. That is impressive. They are your American League and National League Rookies of the Year. There's some discussion, and I love this. It totally goes to the fact that how poorly managed the New York Yankees are. Lonzo, did you see this report yesterday? If I'm not mistaken, I believe they are going after Bryce Harper. Think about that. We were told coming into this season, and if you want to join the discussion, the call-in line, 844-477-3776, or hit us up on the Health Dare text line, text ESPN to 71307. We were told that this Yankee lineup was unstoppable. This year, unstoppable. Nobody had a chance. Back before the year in March, hand them the trophy. Hand them the trophy. How'd that turn out? Massive mistake the Yankees made by going after and hiring Aaron Boone. Massive mistake. Massive. As long as he's the manager of the Yankees, as a Red Sox fan, I'm in no fear of New York. Now, I will say this. I got to give him credit. Lonzo doesn't like this. I've got to give Diddy credit. I didn't like the Cora hire. And I said so on air. I wanted them to go after Girardi, who I really liked and got a lot of respect for. And he was a proven commodity by winning a World Series with the Yankees. And boy, was I wrong, and Diddy was right.
By the way, that doesn't bother me. I don't like the Patriots. I'm okay with Diddy, and I'm okay with the Red Sox. I'm good with that.
Tom Brady.
Hate is a very strong word, but I dislike him to the point where it's right on the edge of hate, you know, like a fingernail away from hate.
So what would make you hate something?
personal reasons. I mean, it, really, this comes. This is sports. I mean, you know, it's not. It's not really. If you hate someone because they're on another team, that you've got a problem yourself. I mean, you can dislike them. You can have fun with rivalries, things like that. I dislike Tom Brady just because he played for Michigan, and I don't like the Patriots, and I don't like Tom Brady. So, I mean, you know, you pick guys you like. You pick guys you don't like. I don't like them. You can't do anything to make me like them. I'm not jealous of him. I mean, congratulations to him and all the things he's been able to accomplish. Good on him. But I still don't like him.
You would love him if he was in a Chiefs uniform. You know, because you would have four
I had to root for stinking Elvis Gerback for a while. So, I mean, you know, who was also a Michigan quarterback. So you can root. I mean, Sammy Watkins is on the Chiefs right now, you know, and he played for Clemson. I don't like Clemson. So, I mean, you know, the NFL, if you're a fan of a college, it's really hard to find a team that doesn't have a player from a team, a college you don't like. It's really hard to do that.
Well, so you gotta
let that go.
You gotta
let it go.
If you don't, you'll drive yourself nuts. I mean, you just will.
But I can't believe I brought up Elvis Gerback. Oh,
yeah, I can't either. I can't believe he actually was a quarterback in the NFL. But that's for another discussion. Speaking of your beloved Clemson Tigers over there, my friend, it is Military Appreciation Week, which I must say, because of the work, whether you love them or whether you hate them, you've got to appreciate the fact that Clemson in every home games honors military veterans in some capacity. Young or old, in every home game, they have a military veteran come out on the field that they recognize for their service, and that is an awesome thing. Now, I think the only difference this weekend as the Clemson Tigers take on the Duke Blue Devils in Death Valley is that because it is Military Appreciation Day, they will designate one of their players to run down the hill with an American flag, which I don't have a problem with, and nobody really should. And it harkens back to Clemson's days as a military school when they were founded. That is losing a lot of the tradition is being lost with the younger generation because it's getting farther and farther away from history. That they don't remember it. So they have to continually to bring that up to remind players and remind fans and students that Clemson was founded as a military school. And subsequently, they're going to be decked out in all purple. Somebody tell me, where did that come from?
What, the purple?
Where did purple and – because all I think of with Clemson is you hear fans, you hear Dabo, you hear players, the orange and white this, the orange and white that. Where the heck did purple get involved in the color scheme? Did somebody just – did a big donor say, hey, I like purple, I'm going to give you $1.5 million, put it in the color scheme?
So you're saying purple wasn't always in there?
I don't know. We need to do some research on that. How did Clemson – I'm going to pose this question. From a historical context, somebody out there in the listening audience, call in and educate our ignorance on where the purple got instituted at Clemson University. Because all you hear about is the orange and white. And I'm not talking about in today's color scheme where you've got these different colors, you know, and all of that. People just do that for different reasons.
Well, I just looked it up, and the orange and purple began when Walter Merritt Riggs formed Clemson's first football team in 1896.
Say that again.
1896.
And who was the guy that instituted the purple?
Walter Merritt Riggs, who formed Clemson's first football team.
So were the colors, what were the colors then? Were they orange and white and they added purple?
The first colors of Clemson can be seen in an early diploma displayed on campus, but to everyone's surprise, they were red and blue. So their first colors were actually red and blue. And whenever Walter Merritt Riggs formed Clemson's first football team, he put in orange and purple. So apparently the purple has always been there, according to the internet, and it's never wrong. So
the white is actually the real cut. So then what you're telling me, Clemson's real colors are orange and purple, not orange and white.
Well, according to this, in early diplomas, it was red and blue. So this guy came in and decided to change the colors, which I guess, I mean, it worked. So I guess the purple has been there since 1896, according to this.
When did the white come in?
I don't know, man. You got me doing all this research. It's like it's my job or something. I don't know. I will see what I can find.
Dabo talking today in his press conference, how impressed he is with Daniel Jones, the Duke quarterback, and this Duke offense, which you really – now, let me be a little bit of a revisionist historian. Remember a couple of weeks ago during his press conference where he called Louisville the best two-loss team in the country? Was that a little disingenuous? This is The Huddle at ESPN Upstate.